Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, and co-hosting with me today is Brian Fogg. You know, we all know, well, everybody should already know this by now, that Gabriel Montoya is off out at the Burning Man in the state of Nevada. He's out there in the middle of the desert trying to find his inner peace so he can get
inner
rid of
zen.
His inner zen. He's trying to get rid of that aura of the dark cloud, so he says, you know, I got to go out there and find myself, you know. He's pulling a little bit of the Doors type of move there. So wish you the best of luck there, Gabriel. Hopefully you come back, man. Not too much of a change, man. Anyways, what's going on, Brian? Thanks for coming on, bro. I really appreciate this.
I appreciate you having me on. I'm just back from vacation. I'm ready to stick my head back into some boxing finally.
You know, you're out in Puerto Rico for a minute. How did that go for you, man? I'm pretty sure it was great. You didn't want to come back to the States.
Oh, not at all. And, you know, I was able to meet up with another fight fan, and it was great. Whenever boxing fans are able to catch up with each other, you go on for hours about boxing. And it's something that we both took advantage of. It's always great.
Yeah, you know, that's something that's rare, you know, comes rare, especially down over here in Northern California. It's really hard to find another real boxing head, you know, without somebody mentioning how Don King has ruined the sport and needs to get out. And it's like, yeah, he's really not as active as what you think. That's how I know you pretty much don't watch the sport of boxing. But, hey, you know what? A lot of news here on Leaving the Ring, ma'am. I had a chance to co-host with Mr. Steve Kim on the next round, and that was a little bit of a different pace for me. It was actually – I was kind of out of my element there for a minute, Brian. You know, I was not used to being the pitch hitter for somebody else. You know, I'm normally the guy that takes the lead and starts bringing up the topics and try to make things as interesting as possible. But, hey, I had a great time with Steve, and we did touch on some subjects on there, like 50 Cent with Floyd Mayweather. But here's the funny thing. It just continues to keep going with this feud. It gets funnier and more interesting every time out, you know. It's a character.
To me, it looks like Floyd's trying to dig himself out, and it just keeps getting funnier. It's like neither of the guys really know what they're doing, and it's just like watching two 15-year-olds go back and forth in the hallway.
Hey, you got to admit, you know, we kind of get sucked into that world, and we end up being those little 14-year-old girls that are just watching everything and giggling in the background. I'm sitting there, and I tell you what, the latest one of that note that he's put on his Instagram, did you have a chance to check that out, where supposedly it's Floyd Mayweather writing a note to Tiny, which is T.I.'s wife, of, you know, professing his love for her and how T.I. would never love her the way he does. That is some great stuff. Listen, Fight Fan, do you want to call in? You certainly can. 347-215-7598. We got a lot of news and notes here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to talk some boxing for about 2 hours here on the show. We're going to be talking about Jermaine Taylor bailing out after shooting his cousin several times. We're going to be talking about Al Haymon, of course. You know, it's always a good subject to talk about, Mr. Al Haymon himself.
Our best friend.
Right. We're going to be talking about how Canelo Alvarez may be stepping up to face James Kirtland. He does have two other options. We'll get touched that a little bit. And Nonino Dernier is going to be facing Nicholas Walters at the StubHub on the undercard of Gennady Golovkin and Antonio Rubio. That's some interesting stuff there. Frankie Randall made it on the news, especially here on Leaving the Ring. That's a touching story. We're going to touch that. But I want to recap what's going on with 50 Cent. What people are missing here is, because a lot of times people are thinking that it's 50 Cent has just kind of started up with him, with Floyd Mayweather again, because this has been going on for the past four years.
Yeah.
No, 2 years. I'm sorry. Since 2012. Oh. My bad. Let me take that back. You know, so Curtis Jackson was getting a little bit of flack from the media and from fans saying that, you know, this guy's just picking. He's being a big bully. Well, here's the thing. Here's what set it off again. And it was on an interview – it was in an interview with Floyd, and it was on with Mr. Live or something like that, where he stated that unlike hip hop artists, every home that I have is paid for, every car that I have is paid for, and I'm $100 million man. So 50 just kind of, you know, took it as that Floyd is taking these shots at, obviously, at 50 Cent and T.I. and Nelly. So, you know, he took it up on himself. He's like, listen, I'm gonna respond back to this guy. Whether or not it makes, you know, maturity sense, I'm just going to take a jab at him, and I'm going to go from there. So that's why he started coming up with those Instagram. The first one was the challenge of the Harry Potter, you know, read a full page. Can't read, can't write type of deal. And it was supposed to be the ice challenge, but he changed it. It was a read off the page challenge. And then, you know, and it just keep going from there. And then soon after, Floyd had said, hey, I'll take your challenge if you can get your son to love you. And all people were like, ooh, it started to get heated. It was getting, you know, it was getting a little salty there between the two, more than what normally has been, right?
Yeah, then, you know, with the two, these two just kind of crack me up, though. It's like a Shakespearean drama, how they go back and forth with their personal lives. Yeah, I just don't get a, you know, it's each time one says something, they each try to one-up them every time, and it's it's getting better and better. But the more I think, I'm hoping my Donna comes in with, I don't know, the Prisoner of Azkaban or something like that in a couple weeks.
Well, you know what's even funnier is that Floyd Mayweather Sr. did an interview. I don't remember who did. I can't give the credit to the site conducted the interview, but Senior was saying that there was obviously something wrong with his son in the first fight with Madonna. I don't know if you saw that interview. You had a chance to hear that interview. And he said that the breakup that he had, that Floyd Mayweather Jr. had with his girlfriend at the time, Miss Jackson, really did take a big part and gave a lot of troublesome for his son, and that's why the fight was a little bit more tougher. Well, I want to know if the second fight with the rematch, if it comes out to be a lot tougher than what a lot of us are anticipating with the rematch with Madonna, Marcos Chino Madonna, I'm wondering if they're going to blame this a little bit about how the BFF feud kind of intervened in the training camp and in the mind of Floyd Mayweather. Because tell you what, 50 Cent, Curtis Jackson goes on to Jimmy Kimmel Live, dude. And this is funny. He said, you know what, I'll change the Harry Potter thing. I'll switch it up. I'll change it to Cat on the Hat. And, you know, I mean, this guy just keeps going in on him over and over and over, you know. I think this is the funny part, is that people buy into this, right, this big feud. And it just grabs attention from everybody. You got, you know, hip-hop sites. You got news sites just, you know, jumping on this wagon of between these two. Because you got to admit, it is entertaining and it's funny. A hip-hop artist going in with the so-called best fighter in the world, right? But then it went down. This is when it starts getting a little too far here, Brian. This is what I think. This website published, called Hustlers.com, they published this false tweet and article that Floyd Mayweather had stated that he would do 12 real boxing rounds at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for $12 million via cash to the winner. It turned out to be that none of that was true. That it was photoshopped and stuff, but I mean it grabbed attention. It did grab attention out there. Fight fans, you want to call in and tell us a little bit about your thoughts about 50 Cent and Floyd Mayweather over here? You certainly can. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving Ring. Or you can tweet us at leavingaring.com. Leaving a ring. What was that? What are you going to say?
Dave, it'd be very un Mayweather or un TMT to not have an excuse ready before a fight happened.
Yeah, it would be, and I wouldn't be surprised, man, if that's going to be something. If this fight is a lot closer again, then a lot of us thought the first time around should have been like a real mismatch, right? This fight is closer, there's two things that you got to really start putting in consideration, in my opinion. This Floyd is getting old, he's getting up there, he may be losing his interest in the sport of boxing, or two, Chino Madonna is just getting better and he's getting stronger than a aging warrior aging athlete like Floyd Mayweather. Again, 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the app to your iPhone or your Android so you can call in automatically into the show. And we'll be opening up the phone lines in a short bit here on Leaving the Ring Radio. You know, I had a chance to watch Rado Rahim from Max Boxing do his interview with 50 Cent. And, you know, 50 was like, hey, man, he was real candid about it. Like, look, it's just I don't believe anything that Floyd's going to do. Like, in other words, if it's becoming Taylor-esque situation. And, you know, and he says, like, it's like a brotherly love, you know. And one of the statements that he made about a week ago, I think, he said, I don't hate him. I love him, actually. Entering the sport of boxing is a reflection of that relationship. He doesn't want any money away. He doesn't make any money away from the sport of boxing. And that tells you when he's done fighting, he's done, period. I just try to encourage him to do things away from the sport. So I don't know really, honestly, what the end of that statement is. I just try to encourage him to do things away from the sport. I'm not understanding what he really means by that, because let's be honest, Brian, what is he doing? What is 50 doing to help him out to be away from the sport?
Oh, exactly. 50 actually tried joining him in the sport. But, you know, 50's kind of giving him, like, a tough love and really tough love. And by, I guess, his brother, I mean, he might be talking about being his stepbrother 15 years apart that they barely know at this point. I mean, this is a, you know, 50 does have a point, though, but what Mayweather, outside of boxing, he really doesn't have much going for him. And we can already see his life as a promoter probably won't be all that great. It's
no.
Just, I mean, that whatever, TNT or whatever that is yeah, that's nothing. And we'll probably talk about the fights they have this weekend later on. Maybe not. Those are kind of a so what. But, you know, 50, when he saw his rap career coming to an end, he got out there. He started, now he's making a TV show, even though it looks terrible. He had a couple of movies, the whole vitamin water thing. He got himself out there. He branched out from the rap game. And because of that, he'll be set for life, not worrying about...
Yeah. Hey, he used his popularity in a very smart way. What he did was like, listen, I'm going to ride the train as far as I can get it, and it's still going. It's still railing down those tracks. So he's doing something
that... And almost none of it's coming from music.
Exactly. Exactly. He's being a really smart business guy. The only thing that he lacked in business sense is when he stepped into the boxing realm. Like a lot of other people that get in the sport of boxing to be a promoter or even matchmaker or manager, they don't have all their senses or all their source kind of lined up correctly to get involved in this sport.
Well,
man, this sport is something else.
I'm convinced you need a heart of coal to get by in this sport.
Right.
It's not, you know, a lot of places you can be a smart guy and get by. But in boxing, it's a whole new game once you step in there.
Well, speaking about having a heart of coal, just this past Tuesday, the ex-middleweight champion of the world, Jermaine Taylor, who's from the Olympics and ended up losing his title a little later to Pavlik.
Pavlik, yep.
Kelly Pavlik, well, he got into a little feud himself. On Tuesday night at his home, Taylor had an exchange of words and an argument escalated between his cousin. And his cousin's name was, God, what was his cousin's name, man? Poor kid, too.
I'll find it here right now.
I got it here, too. I just got to look for it. Anyways, let me put it this way. Tyrone Henson, okay? He put several shots into Tyrone Henson, and the cousin and another man. The other guy didn't get a hit in the home of Jermaine Taylor, okay? But what happened is he shot his cousin. Somehow, some way, his cousin was able to get up, maybe by the help of the friend, and they drove away from the house. They got out of the house, and they made it to a Dollar General store where medical crew and deputies ended up finding them and locating him. Who made the call, the stress call, was Taylor's wife, Erica. I'm like, 6 p.m., 7 p.m. so, right? And so what happened is Taylor, they haven't really found out the complete facts of what the argument was about.
Nope.
The
I found two things odd so far. First off, that he was, his bail was only $25,000. I mean, it may seem like a steep number to you or I, but in the large scale of things, $25,000 really isn't much for shooting someone.
No, it isn't. It's actually a $25,000 bail bond. It's almost like domestic violence only. I've seen guys get out for $25,000 on a domestic violence charge on their first first offense. And here's the thing too is that so he was able to go in front of the judge at the in the county jail via video on Wednesday.
Yep.
And he pleaded non guilty. It was an interplea that he put on his behalf, and he is facing preliminary charges of domestic battery and aggravated assault for shooting his cousin Tyrone Hilton.
Don't those seem like very just low charges for shooting someone? I mean, battery and aggravated assault.
I think what it is that the DA picked this up right away, and the investigation is ongoing. I think that given about a week or so, I think those charges are going to be bumped up, because I think what's happening is they don't know exactly why the gun was pulled out, why he had opened fire. Let's be honest here, is that Taylor's character really doesn't come across that he'd be like this violent guy. He's never really ended up on the news that I can think of right now, So this is a big shot.
He was always pretty low-key.
Pretty much, pretty low-key. Took a picture with the ex-president Bill Clinton, who's also from his home state. So this is out of left field for anybody that's been following boxing since the early 2000s and knowing about Taylor would think, would kind of take back and think, wow, this happened. I mean, this guy normally has came across very charismatic, always had a smile on his face. He was always put on that banner that he needed to do a little extra. Even when he won the middleweight title, he was always put on that category that he had to do a little bit extra to prove that he had that stature of being the middleweight titleist. And then what happened is that he ends up getting knocked out by Arthur Abraham in a real nasty fashion. But he got rocked by Carl Froch. He was all over the place. He had always been on shaky legs. He left the sport.
All three times he was knocked out.
And all three times they were brutal knockouts. These weren't just, got dropped and then the ref jumped in and, waved it off and saved him from it. No, these were actual knockouts that he didn't need a ref. He just needed medical attention immediately after that, right?
Yep.
So he makes his comeback and he's going to be facing, first off, the district judge, Wayne Gerber, he granted Jermaine Taylor to take on the title defense that he's going to be having with Sam Solomon in October, which is going to be aired by ESPN, to travel out of state to train and to compete in that bout. So it's going to be in Mississippi. So here's the thing, and ESPN, they did release a statement about what's going on, the situation. I believe it was yesterday they did the statement, and they still haven't made their final decision. But here's the statement that they had here, Brian. ESPN has committed to carry the fight and was working towards a contractual agreement. We are now receiving the situation and will make a decision once more details emerge. That was a spokesman for ESPN. So obviously, you got to start wondering how much heat or do the morals kick in with this network, knowing that Taylor shot somebody, regardless of the fact that he's a good kid, he never had a prior felony history, but at the same time, that's a pretty bad look, in my opinion. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, well, I think ESPN definitely second guessing themselves and reading the fine print on that contract to see if there's any way they can get out of it. This is a fight that probably wouldn't have done all that great. It's not a must buy, and they're trying to get out of it any way possible. Now, there are two things that I'm wondering though. You're right about Taylor's demeanor. His whole career, he's always been a level-headed guy, real mellow, almost too mellow to draw the big crowds outside of Little Rock. So
and you got to remember too, he's the darling of Little Rock, and that might be two of the reasons why. One, the charges are not really major at the time right now. I mean, those are charges that obviously can be dropped to misdemeanors from felonies. Okay.
Well,
two.
Yeah, that's
two, that's why the judge is granting him to travel out of the state, because like I said, this is a spokesman for his town. He's been a spokesman and a productive citizen that they're looking at it going like, they're scratching their heads. I think just like us, they're scratching their heads going like, something had to kind of go off here. But if his cousin is to die, who's in critical conditions, well, all of that goody good tissue stuff has to go out the door. Now you got to start being rational about it, which really, you let several bullets into your relative. Dude, the rationale has left the door right there.
Well, I also wonder, though, because he's such a level-headed guy, I mean, what was going on between he and his cousin? Was it, I mean, there is a chance it was somehow justifiable. And, I mean, who knows? We really don't know a whole lot about that yet.
Yeah, we don't know anything about his cousin. We don't know whether his cousin went down there and tried to assault him. We're kind of in the dark here ourselves. So the assumptions are going to start rolling of what happened here. You know,
And there's one assumption I want to make, though, about this is not even an assumption, but just a question to raise. And Jermaine Taylor has suffered concussions. He has suffered, I mean, he's had brain bleeding. Maybe it's
good point.
Kind of a Chris Benoit thing. Who knows? I mean, that might be jumping the gun a little bit, but it's something I'm definitely curious about.
Well, here, you know what? Some studies have shown that any type of trauma to the brain can easily change the personality of a person, you know, where they get depressed.
Absolutely. I wrote about that in an article about a month ago, talking about dementia and injuries in boxing, and or in any combat sport or sport where you're hitting your head a lot, you're prone to suffer those types of injuries. And, autopsies of Junior Seau or Chris Benoit looking like an 85-year-old Alzheimer's patient that really couldn't function and understand what was going on. And that worries me about a lot of guys in the sport. And it's a question that really has to be asked about Taylor. If he's unstable enough, you know, like I said, I might be a little too far on this, but that he's shooting someone, should he be in the ring even?
Yeah, that's something that, well, it's going to lead on to Everybody Hates Mondays, my rant, my Everybody Hates Monday rant, went a little bit right now when we talk about the guys, the powers to be to allow Jermaine Taylor back into the ring against Sam Sonnenmann. Let's pass in some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get their take about two of the subjects that we brought up, and then we're going to keep moving on and more of the things that we want to bring in news and notes on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with the longtime caller here, Rob Riller. You're here on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Yo, I want to drop a quote from a great lyricist, and I think Floyd Mayweather can relate to this. Kids my age can relate to this, and if you have kids that are young right now, you possibly can relate to this. It goes, butterflies in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, The Reading Rainbow. Those lyrics are all powerful. And they can really help Floyd Mayweather right now.
Oh man. I don't know. If you guys have seen this. I've been kind of going on a rant on my Instagram with my memes, and I had to put it out there, dude. I'm like, wait a minute, hold up. If he can't read or write, who the hell has been tweeting for this guy? You know? And then that's when he hit me. It's got to be Ellerby. Leonard Ellerby has got to be tweeting for Floyd Mayweather here. You know?
if Ellerby ain't spending 2 months out of the year rubbing Floyd's chest. He's over there. Yo, but man. I mean, you know, my whole thing with the Floyd Mayweather is like it always seems like he's just trying to keep himself in the news, and I think now it's more than ever because his fight, whenever he's not in the news and he's pulling that whole, he's like a wrestler with gimmicks. You know, whenever he came out with that gimmick, I'm mature now and I don't have to sell the fight. The fight sells itself. Wrong. Wrong, the fight doesn't sell itself, Floyd, because nobody wants to see that. So,
right.
Sales go down. I think he's just acting crazy now because of that. And he's just all in this news with rappers because I guess that's the quickest way to get into news now. Next thing you know, he's going to be beefing with Justin. Justin's going to turn on him. Justin's going to turn heel.
That'll be a hell of a Twitter fight.
Yeah, Justin Bieber for Canada.
But, beat that Bieber.
Yeah,
oh my
God.
That's going to be
I'm taking Team Fever.
Remember that one story that came out years ago? I think it was right after the Oscar fight that they supposedly 50 Cent beat up Floyd in his house.
Right.
They did it. So I don't know why they did that, but then they ended up being friends again. He came out with him again. You know what I mean? Like, this is all a show. So I don't know how they get money from this. But, I mean, because clearly, you know, 50 Cent ain't getting money from Gamboa. So. Crawford put a stop to that real quick. But, damn, I forgot what fight I wanted to talk about because y'all started talking about Jermaine Taylor, and I was Forrest Gump Part 2 over there.
Hey, I got to tell you this, though. Hey, really quick before I forget about it. And I said this last week, I mean, this Monday with on the next round and stuff about how I thought it kind of looked in terms of when somebody sits across Al Heyman, you know, a little bit picture shot of the Pulp Fiction. But do you guys get the sense that the relationship between Floyd Mayweather and Ellerbe is almost close to Scary Movie? Remember that one part when he goes, well, in case you haven't noticed, me and so-and-so are gay. And he's like, what? He goes, hell no, dude. He's like, you're gay. He was like, no, what about the time we went to the mall? I like to shop. You remember that?
Ellerbe is the dude that asked Floyd, does it look better tucked in or out? That's who Ellerbe is. That's what they were.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Just shut us down right now.
Yeah. No, I'm not quite sure with Ellerbe what's going on.
Okay. I remember now. It's a John Pascal fight with your boy Adonis Stevenson. To be honest, I don't think neither career needs that fight right now. Because John Pascal, I mean, like, he's 31 years old. He hasn't had bad of a career. And I'm going to say this, and I don't know if a lot of people will agree with me. I don't know if how people feel about this. I think Adonis Stevenson in his draw and loss with Bernard Hopkins looked a lot better against Bernard Hopkins than some people who beat Bernard Hopkins looked against Bernard Hopkins. So I don't really know where he wants to go with his career, and I know he might be feeling himself after Lucien Bute win. But, I mean, that's a pick-em fight. And I don't think anybody, neither guy benefits from that. That, to be honest, is not – unless it's going to be in Canada
Europe.
It would be in Canada, first off.
Montreal.
Montreal. Let me tell you this. I honestly think – you're right. It's a fight that doesn't need to happen right now, but it's definitely a fight that I think that is going to be – so much interest in it. Why? Because you got two guys that are in their prime. Not one of the guys have kind of fallen off the ladder. One guy has been a champion, had great recognition, had a great run, and kind of fell off until we got in with, Bute. Stevenson has been on a run, dude. But at the same time, a lot of folks have called him they've claimed he's ducked Kovalev, who's going to be fighting Bernard Hopkins. Now, Pascal's going to jump on that, and I think he's doing a great job. When you talk about Floyd saying, I'm mature enough not to promote a fight, Pascal is mature enough to understand you got to promote a fight, and a fight that hasn't even been signed or even really talked about yet, he's getting the interest of fans. For him to put out on Twitter, and I caught on Twitter man. I was looking at it, and I seen him. He was on Adonis Stevenson a lot, and then when I had said, you know, somebody's cape needs to be taken away. In other words, because Adonis Stevenson wasn't responding back to him really or anything. You didn't hear anything, any flack from them about what Pascal was doing, right? And then Pascal tweeted back to me, I challenged him to read a page from the comic book Superman without going back on it again, you know? And go ahead.
Do you remember after the Bute fight, the two of them were celebrating together? Say we're best friends.
Right. Well, you know what?
You know what's crazy to
when
me?
You want legacy and you want money, that all goes out the door. Ask 50 and Floyd.
what's crazy to me is that Pascal, in some ways, in most ways, he's a more well-known, established fighter, and he's a more marketable fighter than Adonis is.
Adonis got punch out power, bro. Adonis has been knocking guys out left and right.
He does have power, but when it comes to markability, I mean, Pascal's just explosive. You know, like he has the look. A lot of it has to do with the look. He has the look. He has the personality. He knows how to play mind games at press conferences. He knows how to sell fights. You know, there's a lot of guys that have knockout power and stuff, but they kind of flash in the pan, and I feel like Adonis is at a point right now where he has to take a big fight with somebody. I just don't know if because the fight has to happen in Canada. It has to if it's going to be a main event. Has to have because that's where it's going to have success. Let's say Adonis goes to Canada and loses. his career is over because now you can't sell him anymore. He went overseas, lost some guy overseas. Now you're going to look at him as a guy who couldn't be successful overseas, that came to America and can't be successful here.
Well,
I mean,
both,
you know,
guys,
so
both guys are from Montreal. I mean, they're living in Montreal, though.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're inside in Montreal.
Yeah, he just reps Kronk, though. Like, so, I mean, I kind of American because he kind of reps Kronk, but, you know, I didn't even know. He's Lennox Lewis Canadian. He's as Canadian as Lennox Lewis, let's be real. Come on, though.
Right. Here's the thing about this fight. I think that makes strikes a lot of interest and has a lot of pros and cons about it. Here are the pros, is that both these guys still obtain a lot of amateurist type of stuff in their game. You know, one guy still needs to learn his footwork. Another guy needs to learn how to pace himself. But they do carry good power between the two of them. But Adonis, I would give Adonis a little bit more credit in the power category. Okay, the con about it is, would Adonis Stevenson take this fight immediately? Because I think he's waiting to see whether or not Bernard Hopkins can get past Kovalev. And that would be by far the biggest payday for himself. Pascal, I don't know so much.
You don't think Bernard Hopkins' ship has sailed and that's over with now?
I don't know yet. I mean, you know what? It's hard to count that alien out, I guess, you know, until we find out whether or not he's really human or if he's just taking something that's superhuman. I don't know. You know, he's 49 years old, and he's out there and he's doing things that are a 20-year-old is, you know, should be doing in the sport. He's something for the ages, man. I mean, I want to take nothing away from him because I've always been a Bernard Hopkins fan, but at some point, if he wins this fight, at some point, man, there's got to be people who are going to have to start questioning this, you know, and trying to find out, come on, a clean living? A lot of these fighters have a clean living, but not a lot of them are getting away and beating prime fighters the way Bernard Hopkins has been doing it for the past couple years in his career.
But Bernard does fight like soup. When I say one-dimensional, Bernard Hopkins fights fighters that seem to embody the epitome of one-dimensional. I mean, Kelly Pavlik, you know, I'm talking about a fighter that went to the gym and learned a 1-2 punch and took that all the way to the championship, Bernard Hopkins took the 1-2 punch all the way to the championship. I mean, you know, Kovalev, we're going to find out. I mean, Kovalev has the body work, so that's going to be different. I don't know if Bernard can fight somebody that has the body work that Kovalev has. But I did want to ask you something, Dave. Maidana Mayweather. I mean, this is like 2 weeks off, so, you know, whatever. But I'm going to ask you now, head of the fight, what is going to be a factor in Maidana's strategy, and what do you want to see change in the strategy for that fight?
What do I want to see change? Well, the one thing I don't want to see change is him not being aggressive. I want him to get a little bit more aggressive this time around. Here's the thing that he does need to change, and he's got to shorten up his punches. That's the first thing. The other thing, too, is that when he gets Floyd on those ropes, rather than just throwing punches to throw them, why not set punches up? You know, there's one thing that Floyd's always done throughout his whole career, and I've never understood why nobody's ever caught on to this, is that when Floyd throws a straight hand, he ducks and he steps around you. Wait for the right hand to be thrown and step outside so that you can catch him with a left hook. And left hooks, too, you kind of double them up with Floyd. Nobody does that.
Mosley caught him with.
Yeah. Caught him with a beautiful left hook.
Cotto was catching him with the left hook, but Cotto was doing it off the ropes, though. He had Floyd on the ropes and would kind of wait for Floyd to turn out and then hit him with it. Yeah, you're right. Maidana wasn't setting up punches. I was kind of getting a little too hype in that fight, and I didn't realize that. So, do you think it's more important for Maidana to finish his combos, exiting the pocket? Or do you want to see him just stay in the pocket and try to get Floyd to exit? You know, do you want him to be the first one to get out, or do you want to see him try to let Floyd out of the pocket?
Well, here's the thing is that everybody's saying that Floyd needs to bring back his jab. And if you know, if Floyd brings that jab back into the game, it's going to be hard for you to get in that pocket. So if there is a jab and Maidana gets in that pocket, I want to see him stay in there and allow Floyd to exit out. Because if he exits himself, it's going to be a long night. It's going to be a boring night because we know that it's always going to be every minute or so, Madonna's going to have a chance to get in that pocket. You know, it's a gift when you get in there and you start landing. So that's something that both camps have to kind of keep in mind. You know, I'm you know, hopefully Garcia's are looking at the first fight and scratching it off the board, saying like, okay, this is what we're successful on, but we got to scratch that out. We now got to be creative. We got to add a little bit to what success we had with that first fight, right? If not,
yeah.
If not, Floyd is obviously looking at that fight, and we got to put this out there, regardless of whether or not of what you think of Floyd Mayweather, but he is by far one of the most intelligent fighters to date right now in the sport of boxing. A guy that knows how to adjust to whatever you're doing to him, he knows how to take that away from you. And realistically, the reason why, man, the reason why, and a lot of fighters and managers and people listen to Leaving the Ring and the whole network itself, and I keep saying this over and over, but it just doesn't seem like to kind of be embedded in their heads. The reason why Floyd's success is so good is because of footwork. Fighters today do not work extensively on footwork. What they work on extensively on are hand mitts, which I think is stupid. You take some time with the hand mitts, but man, don't dedicate 2 hours of your work in the hand mitts, okay? Because guess what, folks? Your opponent has a moving motion. He's not going to be there to actually take 5 or 6 punches. He's not going to be there to do that. And another thing that a lot of fighters neglect themselves of doing, and because the one statement that always comes out of somebody's mouth every time I go, do you do any road work? Yeah, but you know what? I really hate doing road work. It's boring. It's not supposed to be fun. You know, I'll tell you what, man. When I used to train kids, I used to train my sons, and some father or mother, normally it was the mothers, which was kind of weird. The mothers would bring their kids, and they'd say, I want my son to be a boxer. I want him to be involved in the sport. And I would really tell them, hey, listen, 2 things. First off, the sport of boxing is really dangerous. But secondly, it's boring. It's not like football. It's not like baseball. These kids have fun practicing, you know what I mean? Because they play, they're playing while they're learning, right? In boxing,
yep.
You're on the bag. You're running. You're jump rope. A lot of conditioning. There's a lot of doing the same repetitive combos because you're trying to perfect them. You're trying to teach these guys how to keep the punches short, teach them how
yeah.
to have defense, offense, the whole work. It's a boring, boring process.
Well,
the only fun
up,
out of it is when you get in there. Go ahead.
To back up a little bit with Maidana, I don't know if you remember his footwork when he was fighting guys like Kotolnik or Victor Ortiz. It was like he had 2 left feet.
Yeah.
He'd be stumbling around in there and just he happened to be able to throw bombs with his right hand. That last Mayweather fight, it almost looked like he knew what he was doing in that. He was cutting the ring off against a guy who had great footwork. And in the long run with Mayweather, it turned out he couldn't compete on that, but he has been improving so much in every fight that I just wonder that, how much he'll improve for this next one. And that will be where it's won or lost, and we'll see how much he keeps improving.
Well, you can't take nothing away from Robert Garcia. I got to tell you that. I mean, I think the added things that we've seen from Madonna's arsenal, because I got to be the first to admit that I thought that Madonna was really out on his way out in terms of his career because the way he had been looking against previous opponents. But
Josecito.
I mean, he was having some tough, rough time in there with Josecito, even with Soto Karas, who's
Morales.
A big welterweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eric Morales as well. So. With Robert Garcia, we've always said that it normally takes maybe 3 or 4 fights for you to start gelling with the trainer, and I think we're starting to see that. I think you're right, Brian. He was cutting off that ring well. The overhand right's always been kind of weird and awkward, but what Robert's kind of taught him is to be more a fearless fighter than he had been, this time with the world-class Floyd Mayweather. And that's something that Madonna possesses that a lot of fighters don't have. When they get in with Floyd, not only do they bring in self-doubt, but they bring in a tremendous amount of respect for the so-called pound-for-pound king. And their whole game plan doesn't even exist.
I think what you said there was right, like, about the aggression, because I remember the first round, and I'm like, I'm watching the fight with my girlfriend. My girlfriend's way more excited than I am for this fight, because I'm thinking Floyd's going to blow him out. Because we've seen Maidana go down from the weirdest shots. Like, he went down from really awkward punches. Against Khan, Ortiz, so on and so forth. And I see Maidana just literally run across the ring. And Floyd, you can, like, his whole posture was weird. He was like, whoa, like, you know, like, get, like what the hell's going on? Like, you know. And Maidana's throwing really awkward shots. Like, this, like, they weren't timed. They weren't even combos. They would, like, be 2-second pauses between the shots. And, you know, Mayweather guy was getting hit, like, he got hit, like, 4 times in the first 13 seconds of the match. And it was, like, you know, really awkward. And he was stumbling a little bit. You know, and my whole thing is, like, in this fight, I always say it, I don't think Floyd Mayweather is going to be a factor, his game plan is going to be a factor. I think the referee is going to be a factor. I don't think the referee wants to be ridiculed. Floyd Mayweather made it really clear that the referee didn't do a good job in that fight, which I don't feel is true, because I feel Floyd Mayweather is, out of the top fighters, he's probably the dirtiest top fighter in the game right now.
Oh,
out of
yeah.
The top 5 fighters.
No, he's up there, yeah.
He's really
so
up there.
I don't think the referee did a bad job, but he made it clear that he made a very voiced opinion that he thinks the referee did a bad job. And I don't think a lot of referees want to have that on there, you know, because that's going to keep him out of a job, you know, if he's a bad referee. So I think the referee is going to be really on top of Maidana. And like you said, Dave, there's a minute or two in the round where he can get in. But how long will the referee let him work once he's in?
That's a good question there, because I think, too, as well as Floyd, we know Floyd to be a bully outside the ring towards his opponent, not just towards women, but to his opponents as well. But he's also known to be a bully to the commissioners and to the refs, you know, to anybody part of the boxing organization. If Floyd doesn't get what he wants, he has these rants,
and the commissioners aren't in a position where they can say no. That's the problem.
Exactly, because they have the pressure of the city of Las Vegas on their backs as well, like in MGM, you know, they're there. So, you know, here's one thing that we know about Floyd is that, and this is how it's kind of proven that he is an intelligent guy, is that he knows how to use his leverage of celebrity when it comes to fight night. He knows exactly what to do. Look at the gloves. Listen, I'm not going to be surprised. I don't think any of us are going to be very surprised day of fight night when it comes down with the rematch between Maidana. There's something going to pop up. It's not going to be as smooth and easy of just the weigh-in and then it leads into the fight. There's always something that happens in between that time frame with Floyd Mayweather. Always.
Well, and then I haven't read this article yet, but Steve Kim just wrote an article about the glove saga or something like that. I just saw it before I came on the air and haven't had a chance to read it, but it'll be something quirky there, I'm sure.
All right, Rob, anything else we can do for you here, brother?
No, not really. I just hate Danny Garcia, but all right, I'll good show. I'm going to keep... yeah.
All right, man. You take it, right, brother. Man. Thanks for calling in. Fight fan, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. You can hear I'll leave in the ring. What was that, Brian?
It was funny. I was talking. You know, I didn't know a whole lot about how fight fans in the island looked at Danny Garcia. And I talked to my buddy down there. He said, "Oh yeah, well we don't even think he's Puerto Rican."
Wow. You know, well, it's a tough deal, man. I think with anybody that are not born and raised in the country that they represent or their, you know, the heritage comes from, it's always going to be a tough deal to kind of be accepted. You know, and Danny Garcia is just one of those. And you know what? Here's the thing, too, though, is there's a lot of fans, like even with those memes right now with Danny and cherry picking and stuff. But I think what we're forgetting is that the guy that does the picking for these fighters, if you're under contract with Al Haymon, your position of trying to make a fight with who you want really is out. You don't have a say. It's all Al Haymon. He makes the decision of whether or not you're going to continue forward. Now, if you try to pull a, well, I'm going to do what I want and you're going to listen to me, Al Haymon, I have a great sense that what's going to happen is you're going to hang out outside of a balcony the way Vanilla Ice did when it comes to Suge Knight.
You know, and I wonder that about Keith Thurman. Just last week, he said, "I'm not signed with Golden Boy. I wouldn't mind signing with Top Rank someday." And you know he's getting a phone call from Al Haymon 10 minutes later, and I wonder if that has anything to do with him being sidelined for it's a pretty long time now.
Oh, he's being sidelined a lot, and here's the reason why, because he's a big welterweight. He brings tremendous power, okay? But the clout that he has with fans have yet – I wouldn't say that it's an Eddie Golovkin type of crowd chasing to see him or meet him, But he does have a good fan base at the moment. But what Al Heyman's looking at is that he has established champions right now that are bringing in the bread and butter. And why bring in Pepper to interrupt all of that, which would be Keith Thurman, right? Keep him at bay. Keep him on the shelf. Airtime will come. The way Al Heyman, let me tell you this, dude. This guy is a music mogul, so he uses the format of way music basically are kind of how they operate, which is you sign all the talent, then you become the dictator. And here's my everyday Monday rant, okay? And this is what I was going to say.
Okay.
I'll tell you right now, I'm going to get a lot of flack about what I'm about to say, okay? And I already know this. I think we're one of the most hated radio shows and hosts out there in the boxing community. But who is the biggest pimp in boxing today? Mr. Al Heyman himself. He's a pimp. If you look at the way he, the way his, the model of his business, this guy would make, you know, Hugh Hefner proud. Because what you do is you use him up, this is what he does, okay? Let's be honest. This is exactly what Al Heyman does. He picks a fighter off the street that's barely making any ends meet right now and puts money in their pocket, which is always good to do, okay? Puts a lot of money in their pocket. But then when he ends up using them, chews them up, and he spits them out, well, he doesn't leave them on the street. What he does is he puts them back on the street, and he continues to make their money. Also, too, what he does is he picks up all the clientele. He swallows all the competition out there. So now he's a dictator. So not only is he a pimp, he's also Fidel Castro. He dictates what's going to happen in the sport of boxing. That's exactly what he does. He Armstrongs smaller promotional companies to big networks.
He's looking to build his monopoly and build a monopoly and from that be able to do whatever he wants, whatever he needs to do. He'll have, you know, total autonomy on the entire sport of boxing. And he'll be Dana White. That's what would happen.
Oh, God. I think he'd make Dana White look a little bit more like a choir boy in some terms. But I tell you what, Dana White and him are those two mother effers that when you're playing a board game with them or you're playing a card game with them, it's like playing with your big brother, okay, where they would make, or your dad, they make up rules while you go so they can win. You know what I mean? They'd be like, oh, no, you can't use that no more. You can't have a wild card no more. That doesn't exist.
You've got to pay me on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right? That's exactly how I look at them and stuff. And so my Monday rant is about how Al Heyman continues to be the biggest pimp of boxing and how fighters are not, you know what, he's making you money. He certainly is. But really, that's all you're going to walk away with is a good half of money for some time. It's not going to last you forever. I hate to say that. Unless you're making some real business decisions through your athletic career, that money's going to go and it's going to be gone and stuff. But, you know, they got to look at it and say, okay, money's not everything. What about my legacy? If you go back all the way down to the AD or whatever of the century of the world, Warriors got into it for a claim of their name to be talked about throughout history. And a lot of fighters right now, it's really hard to put their names along the sides of like Julio Cesar Chavez, Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Roberto Duran, Salvador Sanchez, Marco Antonio Pereira, the list Ali, Ken Norton, the list goes on, Holyfield, Mike Tyson, because of the fact that they're not really taking those big chances to get their names pinned up in the Hall of Fame, where it should really, the way to get into the Hall of Fame should be a lot more difficult. So shame on them, too. What were you going to say, Brian?
Well, one thing, too, is it's not necessarily true that Al Heyman makes you the most money.
No.
Yeah, look, how much did Maidana make to fight Mayweather last time? It was under $2 million, if I remember right. And that's competitive with Chris Algieri. I mean, my God. It's kind of people see everyone thanking Al Heyman and getting fighters quick paydays, but in the long run, he might not be making them the most money anyways. So even in searching for, even being money hungry, you might be making less.
Okay, we got something right here from, really quick, I'm going to answer some questions here on Twitter. From Cracker Man, Joe Vargas. Hi, guys, do you consider guys blowing up in weight the night before cheating, or surely, like PDs, you're endangering an opponent's life? Well, I'll tell you what. There's a little bit of two on that there about blowing up in weight the day of the fight. One is you're not only you may harm the other opponent the way Thurdo Gotti did to that his opponent Munoz and then what's the name of the other guy he knocked out? It's right there on the tip of my tongue too, man. I can't think of his name. Gamache. Okay, the way he knocked out Gamache.
Joey Gamache. Yep.
Joey Gamache. Okay. But obviously you're endangering the other opponent because you're blowing up three or four different sizes. Okay. But two, you're also endangering yourself. Because a lot of fighters do not know how to rehydrate themselves. They end up having more water around the brain than they should. And what happens is they have a greater chance of having brain bleed or anything else being damaged in the fight. So it's one of those things that a fighter should take into consideration, not only you cheating in certain terms. I wouldn't call it cheating, but because every fighter tries to get them an advantage.
Well, they're cheating themselves at the same time.
But yeah, exactly. They're cheating themselves. So it's one of those things they got to really look into. And it's also, this is what comes into the commissioners. You know, they're not doing it. They're not being very diligent about their job and looking into how things should be kind of regulated here. They're not talking to doctors that deal with these type of subjects in these situations.
Now, Dave, what would you do then as a commissioner or as part of the commission?
That's a good question. What would I do? Well, I'll tell you what I would do. I'll tell you what I'd do, man. I'd start getting rid of the guys that their agenda is solely to continue to put lace in their pockets because they have no interest of cleaning or fixing or helping the sport. You got to bring in people, and like it or not, there are some doctors out there that are going to make it impossible for certain fights to happen because of medical reasons, okay? And that's when we need to be kind of sensitive to that subject and say, you know what? We asked for this because – look, there's pros and cons about cleaning up the sport. You're going to see certain fights that are not going to happen. Why? Because this fighter cannot make this weight. You're also going to find out that certain fighters don't belong in a certain division because they have to fight in their regular weight, which is their mandate weight when they come in, okay? And if you look out throughout history, I made a video a long time ago about this, too, on YouTube. I said if you really look at the way history has been made and done, it's fighters cutting weight because – at one time, Paul Williams, the Punisher, was called a cheater because he was, 6'2", coming in at 147, fighting way, way smaller guys, and he was really coming in as a middleweight when he'd fight these guys. So a lot of fight guys were kind of pissed off about that. But I also said, listen, Canelo Trinidad, he's 5'11", De La Hoya. Exactly, Canelo, you know. And the reason why these guys, a lot of these athletes do this is because they're always looking for that advantage. That's why when PEDs were kind of brought into light in the sport of boxing, was it a major surprise to you, Brian? It wasn't to me. Because we always know athletes are, because we always know athletes are always looking
for that extra step. That's part of the competitive nature. But there are...
That's the one thing that I would change. Is I would get people of interest that really, really are looking up to...
And also my question is, who's to determine what's safe? Everyone's body is different.
You're falling out here, Brian. I think you're on a bad spot where you're talking and stuff. But going back to that original question about the commission.
Am I back in? Dave? Hello?
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, sorry, Brian. I guess it was me. My internet's running slow here for some reason.
Well, you know,
it's
just the Blog Talk Adventure, like always.
No, I think actually this time it's my internet. My internet's been really running really slow over here. I've been having it out with Comcast. That's another thing. But go ahead, what were you saying? What was your final statement about that question?
Okay, yeah. Some fighters are going to – I don't know how much I was in and out of, but – some fighters will be able to rehydrate 15, 16, 17 pounds more healthily than other guys. And is that just part of – it's a serious question. Is it part of the athlete or, it's just who they are as an athlete? Or is that a serious competitive advantage that shouldn't be allowed? I'm not sure. I can see both sides in that.
Well, here's the thing. It's like not everything works for – every individual, and that's something that a fighter's got to find out for themselves because obviously we've seen guys get in the ring that are ultra big and they have height, they got reach, but they don't know how to use any of that. So even by cutting weight, what they're doing is they're kind of leaving themselves subjected to get knocked out a little quicker and sooner because their body has no mass to it. So they're walking in weak. They don't. There's no muscle behind them.
Sure.
Right. Slow and sluggish and stuff. So some of it works for some folks, and some of it doesn't work. You know, when your body finally says, "Hey, enough's enough," because your body knows you better than you know yourself.
Yep.
It's going to tell you, and that's when fighters need to learn how to listen to their bodies. Is when they start finding out through their body, which they can't shed that half an ounce of weight to make it to the fight. That's when they have to start listening to their body and saying, okay, I hear you now. I hear you. Let's now jump up and weigh. And Brandon Rios is a great case for that. We saw what Brandon Rios used to look like, man. Looked like the Walking Dead. Finally, he's starting to listen to his body, and now he's going in at 147.
And he looks good there, or healthy there, at least.
Yeah, he looks healthy there and stuff, you know. He still looks like the same Brandon Rios to me, man. I know some people are writing him off, but I think that it always depends on what opponent's in front of you. You know, but anyways, hey, let's talk a little bit about Frankie Randall here. Fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598, you certainly can. We're going to get into the subject about Frankie Randall, a living legend himself, who's got dementia, who was released from prison just last week. And the prison not only knew that he had this dementia and Alzheimer's, they released him. And they didn't release him to the next of kin. They didn't call anybody. What they just basically did is they released him. Brian, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is just this is a deeper issue than just boxing. This is this really speaks into our society as a whole. Being that first off, he was in prison on a drug charge, and then was violated for an alcohol charge. I mean, that's like, and does that really equate to prison time? That's my first question. And apparently in the great state of Tennessee, it does. But then the guy does have health issues, I mean, obviously, and I'll get into that in a minute. But to backtrack, somehow this guy was able to fight until 2004, 2005. He lost to Marco Antonio Rubio, the guy who's about to fight Golovkin in his final fight. And that's how fighters end up in these situations with their health, fighting for 5, 6, 7 years beyond their prime and being allowed to when they're more than likely rather evident issue is going on with them, and normally with things that would be red flags, not allowing them to fight. But it's
right.
This is boxing, so we live in a world of anarchy. He was allowed to keep going. Now, from what I understand, he's not capable of being self-sufficient because, in some sense, the commission, he put his life in the commission's hands. They let him down. And therefore, now he's in a position where he isn't capable of being self-sufficient. He's just out of prison. They threw him out in the middle of nowhere. And this guy belongs in an institution where he can, a full health staff around him, or at least with a family member. My God, this is, a guy in his position could be killed wandering the streets. It's really just a scary situation on all levels.
Not just killed. You know, he can also be taken advantage of, which the handlers of Frankie right now, he's got a very good friend, Catherine, who stepped up, and also with Eduardo, who's a longtime listener here to
yep.
Leaving the Ring, who's a good friend of Frankie Randall, who's been, you know, Frankie's been around him and his family. They stepped up to the plate, and they were like, their main concern was because he has dementia that certain people would come out of the woodworks, which is, you know, real normal, and try to take advantage of him because he is a named fighter. He's a very well-known fighter. He's the first man to give Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. his loss, first man to drop Julio Cesar Chavez onto the canvas. But here's the thing. This, like you said, this is not a question about boxing. This is about a question about humane, you know, that the system, our system is so poorly, when we talk about the commissions, the commission is a speck of what's wrong with this world, okay? We talk about the commissions. You got to look at the system of what we built. Look how they deal with sick people. They either lock them up or they throw them out in the streets. They didn't even bother. I mean, you know how much money we dish into these prisons, these private prisons in
absolutely.
The state of California? And you know what I mean? In all these other states, we just had a lot of money. A lot of our hard-earned money are taken from us in taxes. They go back to the system. And that money is used for better facilities, for prisons, for higher pay, to looking for programs, to fund programs that help out people that either have an addiction or, in Randall, you know, in Frankie Randall's case, he's got dementia. He needs 24-hour nursing. He needs to be in a home where somebody can watch him. But instead, go ahead, Brian.
I agree with you absolutely 100% here. And what we're doing now by funneling money into the prison system is we're just perpetuating the problem. We're creating an endless cycle where instead of, you know, helping this guy, we're throwing him away and creating a situation where it's likely he could end up there again. And, you know, what's interesting is it's not cost-effective for the taxpayers. It, in many cases, would be cheaper for everyone, for society on a social level and an economic level, to help us get this guy health care, get him some sort of adult foster care, get him into whatever treatment he needs for drug and alcohol abuse, anything like that. Instead, it's like we're just giving up on our own.
Yeah, definitely. We're just throwing them aside. So, you know, what LeavingRing.com did is we did set up a donation button on the right-hand side. If you get onto our website, you can see you can donate whatever you can. If it's a nickel, it doesn't matter. What we're trying to do is help out Frankie Randall. We haven't got any update. Hopefully we'll get some update today or tomorrow about a situation. I did hear that there was some type of good news about Frankie Randall, that somebody did step up. I don't want to release the name until I get the complete confirmation and information about the whole situation with Frankie Randall. But, hey, you know what? If you can't afford it, because I'm with anybody right now. The economy is not so well. When you talk about
anything,
being sick,
you know,
the economy,
dollar,
yeah.
No.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, you know, I won't be mad at you if you can't help out, but your prayers are definitely for free. Send them out for Frankie Randall, the surgeon. Let's move on, man. Our best to Frankie Randall. We hope that everything works out for him.
Absolutely.
Let's go with finally, are the training wheels finally coming off of Saul Canelo Alvarez? The strong possibility of him stepping in with Mandingo James Kirtland in December.
Right.
Looks like it may happen. What do you think here, Brian?
You know, I don't know what to think, because you never quite know with Kirkland. He's kind of like Forrest Gump says, like a box. He's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. He's, you know, sometimes he looks like against Tapia or Angulo or against Joel Julio, where you just can't believe this guy. But you never know if you're going to get a fight like he did against Carlos Molina, where he just looks confused and like a B-minus fighter. Now, an A-plus version of Kirkland, an Amwolf-trained Kirkland, I slightly favor over Canelo, to be honest. I think that version of Kirkland is, to beat him, you have to go to some pretty dark places to beat that guy.
You know what's funny is that Kirkland's career and even his life is like a roller coaster, that if you can make James Kirkland a roller coaster at a theme park, he'd by far be the funnest ride to ride on, okay? Because you never know what you're going to get with the guy. Every time he has an excellent performance, he kind of just falls into a mystery box. You don't know where he's at. You don't know what happened to him. He came off the Glenn Tapia fight, which was a sensational fight on HBO. It was by far one of the better nights for 50 Cent, right, as a promoter. But then
one
he just went
to
Right. He went to Conito's and he just disappeared and he made the Houdini trick and nobody knows exactly where he's at. But if he makes this comeback, here's my thing. Canelo is what you call a very consistent guy. Whether you like him or not, whether or not he's a good fighter, he's something that believes in progression. And part of being productive is by putting out product. And that's something that he certainly does. He continuously puts out product. He continuously gets in fights. You know, his first big leap of kind of showing us that he wants to be a real fighter, a real Mexican fighter, in my opinion, was facing Arislandi Lara. I thought he lost that fight, but it was a great effort in terms of picking names that are going to be favorable. Yeah, tough opponents for himself.
You can never fault Canelo for the choice of opponents. I mean, Well, you, early in his career, you know, Jose Miguel Cotto and those types of guys, he could. But, you know, once he had a little more say in it, it was, I mean, Trout, then Mayweather, then Angulo, then Lara. I mean, these are tough guys. And Kirkland to that list, it's, I mean, there's no rest for the weary.
No rest at all, you know. So, and here's this two other options, okay. His other option would be the newly crowned Demetrius Adrian. We call him Andrade, but because it's Adrian. Demetrius Adrian, Boo-Boo, okay, Boo-Boo. And then the other one would be, obviously, Miguel Cotto. I think Miguel Cotto fight is the one that a lot of us want to see, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Miguel Cotto is still trying to figure out who he's going to get step into the ring with. And I believe, what, November is the talks of him to come back as well?
I'm hearing Andy Lee for that, but I'm not sure, not certain.
That's actually, honestly, that's actually a decent fight. I think Andy Lee's a big guy. He definitely brings a nice short left hook, but
they're ex-sparring partners, too.
Ex-sparring partners, exactly.
Under Croc.
Yep, with the late Emmanuel Stewart. So, but if I was Canelo, I would honestly lean with James Kirtland. Why? Because James Kirtland is not consistent. He's always disappearing. That means James Kirtland's got to get back into training mode. That leaves him 3 months of training. If that is negotiated right away, that means negotiations have to go in pretty quick here, don't you think, Brian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, yeah, they would, actually, thinking it's almost September. I'm still in summer mode. But, yeah, but, you know, they've done it before, and I'm sure they'll put a career-high payday in front of Kirkland, an offer he can't refuse. And I think that would go pretty swiftly.
Kirtland has no options. If you really think about it, he has no options.
No, he does. A seven-figure payday would sound great compared to whatever he's doing. What is it? I saw a joke on Twitter this morning. I forgot who said it, but it was breaking a stipulation of the contract is Ann Wolf will not be allowed to train Kirkland.
Hey, that's one of the stipulations right there. If I was Kirtland, that I wouldn't even want to get even close to trying to thinking about or signing, because Ann Wolf definitely has to be in that corner. But how much?
Oh yeah.
I wonder. Which I would think that she would be all in for. Just for one is because you get a chance to get on pay per view, and you really get to have somebody represent the style that you've implicated in your fighter.
He is a live underdog in that fight.
He's a very live underdog if his head is on right. But how many times can you leave and come back to the sport and have a sensational comeback? Every time. I mean, I think about it. Every fight is considered or bannered the comeback of James Kirtland.
Every 5 years he comes back. He's like a constellation in the sky or a shooting star. Every couple of years you see him, but you have to wait around. And you're never quite sure when he's actually going to show up next time.
I think the biggest, one of the worst moves he did was signing with 50 Cent. He should have probably went with the biggest pimp of boxing, Al Haymon. He would have definitely had him out there a lot more in the face of boxing, the world of boxing, than what 50's doing with them right now.
Yeah, well, Al, absolutely. Signing with 50 Cent's essentially career suicide.
Yeah, it definitely did, you know. And even at the time with Golden Boy, when they had the short-lived contract with James Kirtland, they really didn't even know what to do with them. I think it's really not – honestly, let me take that back. It's really – to me, it's really not about having them sign your promotional company. It's really keeping tabs on James Kirtland. It's almost like – it's almost like being that little chubby kid, Johanan, on Get Him to the Greek movie, you know? You know what I'm saying?
He needs a babysitter, and that's the one thing he has been consistent with in his career is making those kinds of mistakes.
Yeah, big time. You know, I mean, if he hasn't got his act together now, he's never going to get it. And I think Canelo kind of sees that. I mean, because look, it's always said it's 80% mental, 20% physical. Canelo's, I don't know where he's at right now, but I can tell you more mentally, he's more stable than Kirtland will ever be. So this is a great move if this fight happens. It's a great fight. I actually like this fight a lot. Nonito Dornier's back in the news. He's going to be taking on Nicholas Walters, man. You talk about a good match, a very interesting match.
Oh, I love this, and I'm surprised about this fight happening.
Hey, let me ask you this. Do you think in some way, somehow, that Nonito Donaire is finally being served up in terms of
a cash out?
A cash out. I mean, he's going to be in the fight. He's going to be finding StubHub in Southern California on the undercard of Gennady Golovkin and Marcos Antonio Rubio. And Dornier's going in. This is an assignment, man, that really he could fail miserably. In my opinion, and I know there's a lot of folks out there still really in love with Nonito Donaire, the Flash. I've always been on the fence with them because I don't think he's a fighter anymore. I really kind of think that he fell into that celebrity mode, and it just kind of turned me off as a fight fan. But tell me if I'm wrong here or not here, Brian. I get the sense that Nonito's ready, almost there, at the edge of his seat to be KO'd finally.
You know, I don't know if KO necessarily. I know so you think it's possible. Walters is a bigger guy who's a puncher at a bigger weight class than Donaire is a natural fighter at. And they have one common opponent, Victor Chinian. And Nonito was losing to Vic when he finally took him out, and Walters, he
was struggling with Vic.
Nonito was struggling with Vic, yeah.
Right. He was struggling with them. Nonito was struggling. I mean, it was Vic was winning that fight. Yeah, he was winning that fight.
It was 6-2 on two of the judges' scorecards.
Then he steps in. Vic, the Raging Bull, Darchinian, steps in with Nicholas Walters, and, you know, his crab style, well, he ended up becoming Chowder.
Oh, it worked against him. And I remember I was talking to you during that fight, and you pointed out with Walters, every time Darchinian would come in range, he'd step on his foot. He'd stomp on it just so he'd know right when he was in range and just throw it a 1-2, and Darchinian with his goofy style just couldn't figure that out. Well, what that showed me was more than being a bigger guy, a faster guy, and a stronger guy, Walters knows the sport. You know, he's got a decent amateur background by what I – or at least he knows what he's doing in there, and that kind of guy is all wrong for Donaire.
All wrong for Donaire. I got to tell you what. And I've said this plenty of times, is when your skills start to deteriorate and you're not the same athlete that you once were, that's when you start seeing these fighters that would normally avoid real challenges, they start taking on these challenges. And Nonito is one of those guys in that category right now where he's not as flashy as he used to be. His hand speed may be there, but he's not that force to be reckoned with that he was 4 or 5 years back. He really avoided fights that should have happened in his prime, and now he's taking fights. What was that?
That was 10 pounds ago, too.
That was also 10 pounds ago, yeah. That's a great point right there. So, I tell you what, I think it's going to be an exciting fight. I think that Walters is going to have some trouble with them in the first couple of rounds with the hand speed, and Nonito is going to always be there to be hit because he doesn't have any footwork. He's completely forgot about how to counterpunch. He doesn't know how to do. How do you forget how to do that? Let me ask you this. How do you eliminate something that was part of your arsenal and it got you to the point where you're at? How do you just neglect
He's actually become a worse fighter than he was starting out. And he was kind of a tactical counterpunching boxer puncher tactician type that could pick apart more aggressive fighters or really pick apart any style.
Funny about Nonito Donaire? Let me ask you this. You know that Nonito Donaire is really known to kind of mimic other fighters' style? He does it at the gym. He likes to show that off when he's having a press conference, open workout. Have you ever seen him do that? He'll mimic Shane Mosley.
I've never seen it, but
he's pretty well known for doing that. I think somebody needs to tell him when it comes to press conferences hey, Nonito, how about not showing up like Nonito Donaire for Nicholas Walter? And show up like somebody else so that you might have a bigger chance of winning the fight.
Not at all. I see Donaire's style, though. He's turned into a guy that's kind of a headhunter. And that can be fun, but you're not as good a fighter as you used to be by doing that. And he looks for the one-punch knockout, and as he keeps moving up in weight, that's going to be harder and harder to find.
It's really sad, too, because this guy at one time was labeled as the next Manny Pacquiao. He did bring explosive speed and power. You fell in love with him. Yeah, I was a major fan when he had stopped Vic Darchinian, when Vic was on this mean streak after beating Nonito Dernier's older brother, Glenn. After he did that, he did what Curzon did. He just kind of just went to the abyss of nowhere and stayed out of the eyes of the boxing media, boxing fans. Then when he made his comeback with Fernando Montiel, he did it again. He had an explosive KO over him.
Yep.
He put him in the electrical shock canvas. But then he did it again. He fell into the abyss, started getting into contract disputes, which is he the advisor to Andre Ward and Miguel Garcia? Mikey Garcia? I don't know.
That's good. But, I don't know. And then he had that mean streak there for a bit where he was just knocking out top guys. But just slowly but surely, it's just been less and less impressive. And, I don't know. It's it keeps going up in weight and up in weight, and it's, you know, I don't think he'll get knocked out against Walters. He still is an instinctive fighter, but I don't see him getting anywhere close to winning that fight.
Absolutely not. I tell you what, the guy that does keep himself in the news and he keeps himself interesting, but still has a lot to prove whether or not he's going to be a big part of the sport, because at one time he was considered, talking about being compared, and Broner would fall into that that cliche of being compared to other fighters, was he was going to be the next Floyd Mayweather. Is Andre Broner putting out on Instagram a picture of him standing across, who was it? Peterson. It was the
Lamont Peterson
saying that in September 6th that they were going to have the showdown instead. But obviously it was something just to hype up, to get fight fans all boiled up about it. And,
careful with his work here.
I'm going to tell you what. Broner, after the sport of boxing, needs to be part of a publicity PR company, because he does know how to market things, man. This kid's got an eye of how to get people talking about him, you know, where Floyd's a little bit different. Floyd's got people, in my opinion,
it's not second nature for Floyd. That's what I meant.
Exactly. And it's not second nature for Floyd to be funny. Where Broner, if the feud was between 50 Cent and Broner, you would have to say that they would probably be neck to neck, because Broner is a funny kid. Let's be honest.
I don't think he knows he's funny.
He's funny. Anybody that dressed like him and show up to the Showtime panel, dude, they gotta know he knows he's funny, you know?
Okay. I mean, that's true. You better, it's coming up next week, you better take that serious. Emmanuel Taylor is no chump and could very well beat him. And Taylor's just coming off a big win over Kareem Mayfield. One loss on his record, and that was against, pretty sure it was against Chris Algieri.
Chris Algieri was actually a really good fight that he had. And with Kareem, let me tell you something about this, about Emmanuel Taylor, is that, and a lot of people don't know who he is. That's the first thing. A lot of fight fans don't know who he is. But Kareem Mayfield, who's the hard hitter out of San Francisco, definitely got a punch that could turn a fight around quick, okay? He was on his winning streak and got in. You got to say that Taylor was at least able to take the best punch if it was landed by Kareem Mayfield. So punch there, to take a good punch, you know he can take it. And Broner, luckily for Taylor, is not a big puncher.
Not at 140. He wasn't at 135 necessarily either.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, that's a very tough fight for him, and I'm actually surprised they gave him that fight.
I tell you what, Taylor Dotsy, he should have his homework covered. He should have done plenty of study of what Broner's mistakes are. One of them is that, which surprises me, because when he fought Carlos Molina, Molina had some minor success with the overhand right the way Madonna did. So that's a plus there, but I think Broner...
That's a red flag.
He hasn't found a way to defend himself when it comes to that punch there.
No, and he hasn't. In the last couple of fights, I haven't seen him improve. the way that we all sort of expected him to. The way he kind of shot up out of not out of nowhere, but he shot up fairly quickly, and then he gets to this level, and it's like he's plateaued in the last couple of years. And he's really going to struggle in a good in a tough, fairly deep division if he doesn't figure his stuff out.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, this is, to me, this is the fight whether or not we're going to really see Broner headline anywhere, even in his home state. He's always brought some success in his home state of Cincinnati. But if he doesn't get past if he doesn't get past Taylor, which I think is a really up-in-the-air type of gig for him, I don't know where you can place Broner at anymore. That about billions is going to have to be erased, you know, or washed off his face.
Well, that same weekend, there's something I want to bring up. Actually, a couple things I want to bring up about that weekend is, well, first is the Klitschko fight was, not that anyone cares about Klitschko in the States, it seems, but was canceled and rescheduled in a matter of days. And I thought it was rather odd, a torn bicep, and days after talking about it, they were able to put a new date down. And I just thought that was, for anyone that's ever torn a bicep, I thought that was really weird.
I've torn my bicep. It doesn't heal, you know, it takes a long time for it to heal. It's almost like a back injury. You remember when Andre Durrell pulled out of the Abraham fight, which was scheduled in the desert of the neighborhood of Timothy Bradley, he pulled out because of a back injury, but then made a date the same day of the comeback fight, when the fight was going to happen. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's fishy. It's really fishy.
And it was with Pulev, who's a very, I mean, I don't know, he's nothing special, but he's a game guy. Also that same weekend, though, is Juan Francisco Estrada fights Giovanni Segura.
What a good fight. What a great fight right there.
Oh,
I like that fight.
That's a great fight. Are you kidding me?
That's a fight that should be on HBO, man, to tell you the truth. Boxing After Dark, that's a fight that should be in the traditions of Boxing After Dark. Why isn't it not there? Well, only HBO executives know.
Yeah, I think that's like a fight of the year kind of fight. I mean, that's there's no way that couldn't be a good fight, in my opinion. But at least American fight fans will be able to see it on, BEIN or... I don't get the channel.
BN or something like, yeah. I don't get that channel, to tell you the truth. I don't get it at all. I mean, I wish I did, but
I tried to order it, but...
Yeah, I can't figure it out. And stuff. Like I said, I'm in a feud right now with Comcast. I'm going to start making Instagrams and giving them a challenge as well pretty soon here. But I tell you what, a lot of the times with that BN channel, the fights do end up on TR Boxing on their solo book sales schedule. So you'll catch it, but it's going to be at midnight. You know what I mean? And that's something I had to figure out because I think the Tony DeMarco fight was on there. Or some fight was on there. I can't remember. It was supposed to be on the BN channel.
Against Tyner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, somewhere, somehow, somebody's going to post it on somewhere. And hope I don't jinx myself here. Anyways, fight fans, we're up at the end of our show here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I want to thank my co-host, my sidekick today, which is Brian Fogg, who's a journalist for Leaving the Ring Radio, for coming on the air and talking to me and to all our listeners here on Leaving the Ring. Brian, thank you again, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on, brother.
Hey, no problem. Hey, again, don't forget every Monday you got the next round. On Tuesdays you got Tijuana Boxing Radio, which is on our mobile app. You got to download the mobile app. You can keep up with our news. You can follow us on Instagram, our tweets, our Facebook. You can keep up with the radio shows here on Leaving the Ring every Thursday. We didn't have it at 5 p.m. like we normally did, but we do. But today we had it at 3 p.m. Next week we'll be back on our regular schedule. Next week I think that my fellow Bernie Man, well, not fellow because I've never been to it, but Gabriel Montoya, the Dark Cloud, should be back. If not, we'll probably have Brian Fogg do a sit-in for him again here. Anyways, have a great weekend. There is no fight this weekend, but don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Have a great weekend.